This episode is brought to you by Huggies Little Movers.
Listen, Huggies knows that babies come in all shapes and sizes, and so do their tushies.
Especially when they start really moving.
With Huggies Little Movers, you get their best fitting diaper with its curved and stretchy fit.
That's right. So no matter what kind of mover you've got, they'll feel protected and comfy while their little tushy wiggles and jiggles all around.
Huggies Little Movers has curves designed to fit all baby curves, and helps provide up to 12-hour protection against leaks.
So, make the switch to Huggies Little Movers today.
We got you, baby.
When I'm on my way to drop off the kids at school and I'm on about 5 hours of sleep and I haven't had my coffee yet, I'm truly one of a kind.
Yeah, this sounds like the beginning of a horror movie.
It is. But there is one thing I can do immediately to bring some comfort and calm to the situation and keep me moving forward. Eat Keebler Sandies.
I like to think that if the good-looking guy was still around, sitting on the couch, comforting himself about not getting into college, he'd ditch the Cocoa Puffs and down some Keebler Sandies instead.
Mixed with chocolate syrup?
Ooh, why not?
When you need a comforting moment for yourself, Keebler Sandies is the perfect treat to keep you going.
Each Keebler Sandies shortbread cookie is baked to perfection by the Keebler Elves for a light sweetness and a texture that melts in your mouth.
The next time you feel like you're juggling it all, reach for Keebler Sandies shortbread cookies to enjoy a simple moment of comfort.
When it comes to Pod Meets World, we're synonymous with two things. Watching our younger selves on a TV show from 30 years ago and loving Hyundai.
The first ever fully electric Hyundai Ioniq 5.
With up to 303-mile range, available two-way charging, and other category-defining features, the fully electric Hyundai Ioniq 5 is one of the most teched-out electric vehicles ever.
And as you know, we are tech heads.
The standard ultra-fast charging capability gives you an 80% charge in just 18 minutes when using a 250-plus kilowatt DC fast charger.
And with the available two-way charging, you can charge larger electronic equipment inside and outside the car, backyard or side yard.
Hyundai, it's your journey. Learn more at HyundaiUSA.com.
Call 562-314-4603 for complete details. 2024 Ioniq 5 rear-wheel drive has an EPA estimated driving range of up to 303 miles. Actual range will vary with options, driving conditions and habits, vehicle and batteries condition, and other factors. Available in limited quantities and select states only.
What if there was someone who wanted to help you find a job? Choose Express Employment Professionals, and that's exactly what you'll get.
They can help you find work in any industry. With just one interview at Express, you have a connection to endless jobs.
Whether you want a contract job, a new full-time role, or a summer job, choose Express Employment Professionals.
Express has more than 860 locally owned locations and no fees for job seekers.
Visit expresspros.com today to find a location near you.
Writer, I like your glasses.
Thank you. I've been wearing them a lot lately because I'm out of contacts. I wear daily contacts for astigmatism, and I have run out. So I'm
When did you start wearing glasses? I mean, when did you start needing contacts?
In my mid-20s. I remember sitting in a theater in New York with my buddy, and like, I couldn't see the stage, you know, I was like squinting and I was
like,
and I was like,
blurry to you?
Yeah. I was like, So I was like 26, which I think is when, you know, it starts happening. If you're going to have astigmatism, like bad eyes, at least that's what I was told.
And that's great. Writers writing a review. It was a decent play. I found the actors to be very blurry.
Very blurry.
I thought they could have done something about that, frankly.
Will, do you wear glasses?
No, I have strange eyes. When I was 8 years old, I was diagnosed with something called keratoconus in one eye. So my cornea is shaped like a cone instead of concave. So I need to wear I've worn one glass, essentially. It's called gas permeable, but like a thick, heavy contact lens in one eye.
You have a glass eye.
Since I was 8 years old.
You have a glass eye.
My eye's normal, but the tiny little contact lens I wear, that's... And the fun thing is, you know, with the daily ones that Ryder wears, I've worn soft contact lenses. It's like an angel is softly kissing your eyeball as it helps your vision.
It doesn't bother me at all. I find glasses more annoying than contacts. Some people just can't wear contacts. No. But you have like a full-on piece of
I have a piece of glass and a lens in my... So if the tiniest little grain of sand or dust gets in there, it's like just a ice pick in your eyeball.
Do you have to wash it every night then?
Oh, yeah.
You have to do the whole morning, every night, every day. See, when I first got contacts, I had to do that. Like, you know, I would wear the monthly contacts or whatever. And when I got the dailies, I was like, oh, this is a dream. Because I used to fall asleep with them in my eyes.
Oh, jeez, that's not good. And then tomorrow, strangely enough, that when we're recording this, but it's weird that you asked, tomorrow I actually have an eye doctor's appointment, and it looks like I finally have to get reading glasses.
I think you should just wear an eye patch. Just take out the glass eye.
Do you know why pirates wore eye patches?
Oh gosh, why?
Do you know why pirates wore eye patches? People thought it was because they'd lost an eye in battle. No, pirates actually wore eye patches to constantly keep one eye dark, so that if they had to in battle go under to the second floor of the bottom of the ship, which was dark, they'd move the patch over, and they were already accustomed to the dark, so they could see everything in the dark.
Where'd you read this?
That sounds really cool, but it also sounds like complete crap.
No, apparently this is true. We'll send letters. No, so apparently the pirate, because what you would have to do is you would always have to, if they would attack another ship, you would have to go from where it's very bright to the top deck to the bottom deck where it's very dark. So they'd pull
the
patch
and rods
over.
And the adjustment. Yeah, no, it totally makes it's actually really a cool thing, but I've never heard that before.
I have, yeah. So that's apparently what they say. I read a lot of history books and watch a lot of history channels, so that's what I hear.
I've been blown away by Will's wealth of knowledge and factoids. Trivia. It's not useless. You've been, ever since like the age of 16 when I met you, I feel like you've just had this wealth. I mean, like, I remember like Greek myths. It's astounding to me. Like, you say one thing, like, I had Will on my other podcast, Literary Disco. Will on my other podcast, and we did a fantasy-themed episode because he's our fantasy and sci-fi correspondent. And, like, I made a reference to a Pegasus, and Will's knowledge just, like, kicking over
Pegasus.
Oh, what's that? Pegasus is not a species. That's actually
it's
the name
not.
Of
Pegasus
a specific horse.
Pegasus was one horse, yes. Pegasus was Perseus's horse. There are other flying winged horses, but Pegasus
how
was
you
one
keep this stuff
one.
In your brain and then like random Boy Meets World episodes. They're all like all if that. We could just if we could do a journey through Will's brain, it would just be like fantasy storylines, like and like huge family lines of fantasies. Cause they, you know, he reads like the 1,000-page books.
Oh,
he'll remember everybody's name, how they're all related, all the Greek myths, all
they're all behind
like,
me. That's all my that's
and then,
fantasy. All
and then
there.
Boy Meets World lines.
And every episode of MASH.
Oh, and man, every episode don't even get me started. When I was, for our live show, we did something very fun that involved some trivia, and I was doing the deep dive into Boy Meets World trivia, and most of it, when I got to the harder stuff, I had no idea, none.
Yeah, yeah,
and
no,
I was,
neither did we.
No, and I remember then, but then I tried to put it in context of MASH, as in I'm a MASH fan, so a Boy Meets World fan.
Uh-huh. Right.
Hearing these questions, I could have answered every single one of them.
About MASH. You could.
About MASH. Yeah. So a Boy Meets World fan would have nailed these questions.
I have this memory.
Idea.
I have this memory of hanging out at your apartment in the Oakwoods first season. And you said, I remember every line from every movie I've ever seen. And I was like, that is such crap. That's not true. And you're like, give me a movie. Give me a scene. And the only movie at the time that I knew like forwards and backwards was Stand By Me, which was my favorite movie. I had seen it 50 times literally at that age. And, you know, whatever. I've talked about how much I still love that movie. But it was the only movie I knew. And I was like, okay, the bridge scene when they have to cross the bridge. And you proceeded to go line by line. You walk 5 miles down the river, you got to walk 5 miles back. Meanwhile, you guys are dragging your candy asses halfway across. I was like, I was sitting there just being like, oh my God. And you're like, do you want me to keep going? And you knew it. I was like, how many times have you seen the movie? It's like, once. But you just think, and then just yesterday or 2 days ago, I told you I was teaching broadcast news to my screenwriting class. And you were like, oh, great movie. And he started quoting scenes line by line. He's like, oh, when the producer says, you know, you must be hard being the smartest person in the room. And she goes, no. I was like, how do you remember this?
Oh, wow.
It's insane.
It's just the way my memory were. I mean, again, I would, by day two of Boy Meets World rehearsals, I knew everybody's lines. just everybody's lines were in my head. They were just
there. I did used to be that way for our show, like while we were going through it. And even now as a director, if I'm directing a sitcom, I will know everybody's lines in every scene and what their blocking is because that's,
it's just in your head.
It's just in your head.
You must do that with literature writer. I mean, you read so much. There's got to be some books that you could quote backwards and forwards.
Yeah. Poems. I used to memorize poems completely. I mean, there was a moment when I was going to actually try and memorize all of Walt Whitman's Song myself, which is like, 100 and some pages or whatever. And I got pretty far. I would just remember the difference between like you and me, Will, was that I would read things over and over and memorize them. You would only have to hear something once. If you read something, you wouldn't remember it as well
as much.
Right?
Because
I remember you saying that if you were in class, if you were in a class, you wouldn't take notes. You just focus on the teacher and you'd remember everything.
Yeah.
I'm the exact opposite. Like I need to like write it down.
I need to write it and read it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but then again, I think one of the things this podcast has showed me is that my memory is not as good as I thought it was or other people thought it was because people send us pictures or things like that.
Yeah.
And we got that, yesterday somebody sent a picture, no memory of that whatsoever. And Ryder, you proceeded to give a 4-page dissertation of everything that had happened that day. And I remembered
But that's what's so cool about this is that we're able to share all these memories, like it is interesting what we remember like individually and it kind of, adds up to hopefully
it does. It forms the whole painting.
The whole picture.
One of us has this color. One of us has this color. Right. Oh man, I didn't even know this was happening.
Well, yeah, that's very cool. One thing is for sure. We all remember our guest this week.
Oh yeah.
So let me welcome you to Pod Meets World. I'm Danielle Fishel.
I'm Ryder Strong.
I think I'm Will Friedle.
Maybe.
You remember?
As always, we have got, say it, Will.
Merch.
We've got merch. We have holiday merch, guys. We went over this a little bit, but we have got 2 hoodies.
Yep.
The number one most requested item, mugs. And we brought back Save the Plane for Minkus with a new colorway. It's in blue. This is for real the last time. This is your chance to get it. It's in blue. Once the holidays are over, it is gone forever.
Like the plane you would have missed.
Correct. That plane is long gone.
Long gone. Yeah.
We've got bumper stickers. We've got lots of fun things. So check out our holiday merch and a Shady Melon shirt. Do you want to always commemorate the very odd cantaloupe that Alan held while slyly referencing Hamlet, only to smash it on the ground and then leave the room? Well, we all know one. And now you can have the Shady Melon tea. So Jeff Minnell was the executive story editor, producer, and writer of Boy Meets World. IMDb credits him with writing 18 episodes, and in season 1, he wrote 2 episodes, and he was the executive story editor for 4 episodes, which I don't really know what that means. Did we talk about that, executive story editor? I can't wait to ask him.
We talk about credits, how writers, you create these credits for writers in order to get them like producer credits and whatnot.
It's a regular story editor, but you get to use the big bathroom. Something like that.
Let's welcome Jeff Minnell.
You guys look good.
How you doing? You look great.
What do you call me Jeff for? You've never called me that in your life.
Minnell.
There you go. That's right. How you guys
doing? We had a bunch of Jeffs on the show, in all fairness.
Oh, you have already? I haven't listened to everything.
No. I'm saying on Boy, we had...
Oh, that show.
McCracken, Sherman. There was Jeff's Abound on Boy Meets World. Yeah.
You're right. That's why I went by Minnell. Yeah. So what's new since I last saw you?
Oh, not much. Nothing much has been going on. Let's go back to the very beginning.
Oh, man.
How did you get your job on Boy Meets World?
Oh, wow. You want to go way back. Okay. Well, first of all, I think, I don't even know. I was wondering how much you guys know about All Our Lives. I take for granted you know some stuff, but maybe not. I've known Michael since we were 7 years old. Do you know that?
Oh, my gosh. Yes, I do know that.
I have this image of a story that I think you told me once of going to his house and him playing guitar. Was that the first time you met him?
You know what? I can't believe I told you that story because now I'm going to tell it again. But yeah, that was the first time we met.
Tell it.
Yeah, we lived, so I'm from Jersey, and we had just moved to Edison, New Jersey, from New Brunswick. And my parents, I guess they made friends with Mr. and Mrs. Jacobs. And they said, we're going to take you to a house. There's a boy there. He's your age. You're going to be going to school together.
You're going to be working together forever.
I didn't know that, believe
me. Oh, my God.
So we go to his house, and, I'm not just, I'm a dumb 7-year-old kid. I just do whatever my parents tell me. We went. He says, hey, y'all come up to my room. I'll show you my comic book collection or something like that. Yep. Sounds like a pickup line. But anyway. So we go up there, and I see he's got a guitar in the room. I mean, his room looks very different than my room. And he goes, I go, you play guitar? He goes, yeah. You want to hear a song I wrote? I go, a song you wrote? You're 7. And he takes out the guitar, and he starts playing, and he starts singing. And I felt bad probably for the first time in my life about myself. but I really kind of had a feeling. I go, this guy is a genius. Anyway, so that's how we met. I mean, that's many years ago. So anyway, we've been friends forever. And I never actually wanted to write for TV. I've always wanted to be in movies. I love movies. I was a film reviewer for the Hollywood Reporter in New York. And I was really enjoying my life. And then a friend of mine who saw an opportunity said, hey, your friend Michael Jacobs has My Two Dads on the air, right? I go, yeah. He goes, we should pitch him ideas and we could write a script. I go, oh, okay. So I started calling him every week with ideas. Some he would say, that's really stupid, or we did it, or maybe season 2. I don't know. Anyway, and then that stopped. And I just never, you know, I sent him movies I wrote. I wrote a movie about a serial killer. And he wanted to turn into a comedy. And I said, no, that's okay. Anyway, one time, I finally wrote a spec Seinfeld. Seinfeld had just started. And I really loved the show. So I called him up and I said, I don't know the business. I said, if I send you a Seinfeld script, if you like it, can you get it to the Seinfeld people? And he goes, yeah, sure, which is a lie. You know, you don't send specs to the show you write because they legally won't even read them. But anyway, so I think after all the years, it's the first thing I wrote that he liked. And he called back and said, hey, I like this. And I said, so good. Can you get to the Seinfeld people? He goes, yep. And that's the last I heard from him. And then about 5 months later, he calls me and he goes, so listen, we're doing a pilot. I don't know if it's going to go. Probably won't know for a month or two. If it goes, you think you might want a job? And I go, oh, I don't know, man. We had just bought a house. My wife was pregnant with Dara. That's, you know, right. Dara. Yeah. 29 now, by the way.
Oh, my gosh.
And I go, I don't know. So he calls me 3 months later. We're in this house. Dara's born. And he calls. He goes, all right, they picked us up for 13 episodes. Do you want the job? I need to know by tomorrow. And I go, oh, my God. So I go, I'll call you back. I got an immediate headache. I never wanted to leave the East Coast. I love New York. I live Jersey. But, you know, it was opportunity of a lifetime. So Lisa goes, all right, you go. She'll stay behind with the kid. I called the next day. And he goes, I did ask him this. This is my only important question. I go, how do you dress? You don't have to wear a tie or anything like that. He goes, no. T-shirt is good. And as you know, I've worn one ever since you guys met me. He also said, though, but there's going to be a woman who co-created the show with me who's going to hate you. And I go, why would you tell me that? He goes, well, she wanted someone on staff, but I'm putting you on because I'm, you know, bigger. And I go, you didn't have to tell me that. I could have just gone and maybe made friends with her.
Yeah,
and
maybe worked it out.
Yeah, you worked it out.
Or maybe that's not going to happen.
Well, right. I thought it happened. Apparently, according to the other writers, it didn't, but whatever. Anyway, so I came out to California by myself, left Lisa and Dara behind.
Right. I remember that whole first season, right? You guys didn't move out until second season? Or
No, she came out. He came over one day out, and he came over to me right before a show, and he whispers, he goes, they picked us up for the back nine. Call Lisa. So I called her, and she made arrangements, and she came out literally 3 weeks before that giant earthquake. So she hated me.
Oh my gosh.
That's right.
Terrible timing.
Welcome to town.
Yeah. And she goes, we need an earthquake prepared kit. I go, Lisa, that's such a rumor. No one needs that stuff. And then boom, you know.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Always anyway, listen to your wife.
You're right. So I came out, and I got to say, you know, it was pretty exciting, especially the first season, because, I'm a kid from Jersey. We're shooting on the soundstage where Mary Poppins was shot.
Yeah.
And I'm rooming. I share an office with Jeff Sherman, who first day told me who he was, the Sherman brothers or his parents. Right. I mean, his father and uncle. I go, it was just like, I go, what the heck? This is not supposed to happen. But anyway, so
wait,
I was there from.
Did you live at the Oakwood?
Yeah,
you
well,
did.
Don't you remember?
I do. I remember that you and I would see each other. Again, everybody.
I didn't
lived
realize
at the
you
Oakwood.
Were at the Oak. I lived there the first season too, but I didn't realize you were there.
I don't remember you, but I remember seeing Will a couple times with some guy, right?
With Spencer. With Spencer. With my roommate.
And, you know, I didn't think it was such a bad place, but then some of the other writers came and they saw, you know, I had a Murphy bed and they go, yep, we got to get you out of here. So I rented a house, but it wasn't so bad for one guy, you know?
And, yeah, totally.
It's built for one guy. The Oakwood was built for one guy.
You're right.
It's like divorced men dominated the, and actors. That was it. All that was at the Oakwood. So strange.
And me.
And you. Yeah. And you. And
what was, yeah, what was your first impression of the cast?
No, literally, well, please do impressions of all of us.
And Ben, go.
And Ben. Ben's the only one you can do impersonation because he's so manic. I think I was actually there for Will's audition because, you know, so I was there for every episode, but the original pilot.
Right. Because
the original pilot was some guy named Harry, right? Or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, Harry Brandish, she,
yeah,
yeah.
And Matt McCoy was the dad, so I'd seen the pilot, and then we came and they cast Rusty, and I think, Will, I feel like I saw you in the audition, and they loved you and cast you, and then you came out and all that stuff. So, and Ryan, you know, I was enamored of everything. I'm enamored of Hollywood and television. I'm out there. You guys were all great right from the get-go. I mean, you know, Ben obviously is a little over the top, but fun. And and Bill, listen, I mean, I had trouble even looking at Bill the first few weeks because this is Bill Daniels, man. He was in The Graduate and St. Elsewhere, which was one of my favorite shows. So I was kind of like, and by the way, I'm older starting as a TV writer than most. Yeah, I'm 38, right? Mm-hmm. And that's when I'm starting my TV career. Which, by the way, I had no idea how long it would run. Like, Ed Dechter kind of took me under his wing because he was from Jersey. He said, don't live beyond your means because this could end tomorrow. You know?
Yeah.
He
was, yeah, not bad advice. Yeah,
no. It was not bad advice. We got lucky.
We got
The show would only get picked up last minute each season.
Every season. We always felt like we were on the chopping block. It's crazy.
It was kind of weird now that I look back because it was kind of a popular show, I think, you know. But we didn't know. There was no internet back then, so we didn't really know what was going on. So my first impression, though, I remember, like, the first table read, you know, I loved everyone. But for me, William Russ, who I just saw, I loved Wise Guy, like, beyond belief.
Great show.
And me, then, it's Roger Lococo. And we went up to him afterwards. And, you know, I was more like a fawning fan than a writer. and by the way, I was just starting, so I wasn't even barely a writer yet. And but it was just crazy. I mean, the whole production, it was great. Right from our first run through on that soundstage, we had the whole soundstage for ourselves. You remember that?
It was enormous. So big. It was enormous.
It was too echoey, you know. Yeah. But it was enormous. But it was just, it was kind of a dream come true for me. You know,
it's so funny to me to hear you tell that story because it sounds so much like our stories. And when we were, you know, when we were kids, obviously, when the show started. And so from our perspective, you guys, without knowing anything, you guys were all experts. You all knew everything that was going on.
Yes.
You guys were completely in charge. Nothing was new. Right. This was not like, it was all so to us, it seemed like you guys knew exactly what you were doing. And yet you had basically just moved out here wide eyed and bushy tailed and just as excited as all of us.
We were all more experienced than you were by this point, apparently.
We've done more TV shows. That's probably true.
Were. I had no TV experience,
right?
Other than watching it, and you know, I mean, I had writing experience. I was a film reviewer, and I had a weekly column, a monthly column for the Entertainment Weekly. I was really enjoying my life. I was a freelance writer.
So did we ruin your life?
Well, ultimately, I didn't realize it at first. It was an amazing. Now, once I made the decision, and I give Lisa a lot of credit because she. She didn't really blink. She says, go ahead. And she was working full time. She had dropped the kid off. You know, I made a few mistakes. I go, oh, yeah, I went to see a movie last night. She goes, oh, really?
Here was exactly. It must be nice.
How was that? So,
make that mistake once.
We talk a lot about moms on this podcast and how important they are to us.
Absolutely. Without Jen Fischel, what pictures would we post on our social media?
But above and beyond all the incredible mom things they did for us, laundry, dinners, let us travel to Los Angeles alone to chase our dreams of acting. Will, what else was your mom doing?
My mom was also running all three courts in Connecticut while authoring books.
Wow. Well, whether your mom was a legal trailblazer or just the greatest source of inspiration and care in the world, this Mother's Day, she deserves some flowers.
You're right, and that's why I'm sending mine farm fresh flowers from Books.
That's short for bouquets. And while I'm teaching you things, how about 25% off your entire Bouqs order so you can join us in treating our mothers to a beautiful arrangement?
Love it.
Here's why I like the Bouqs company. They are different. Their flowers are cut fresh and sourced directly from the best flower farms, so they last way longer. They even have flowers grown on the side of a volcano.
That's really cool. Bouqs has modern designs and unique flowers you can't find anywhere else. Your mom is unique, so she deserves flowers just as special.
And Bouqs is simple. I went online, picked the delivery date, and I'm done.
Mother's Day is May 12th. Don't miss the chance to thank your mom. Order your Bouqs now.
And with 25% off, you can send some to mom, wife, aunt, and even grandma.
Go to Bouqs.com and use promo code WORLD for 25% off.
That's Bouqs.com, promo code WORLD.
Bouqs, promo code WORLD. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee, and you'll feel it.
Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh, every step feels fly.
When it comes to style and luxury, eBay gets it. They're making sure the things you love are checked by the experts.
Not just any experts, specialized experts, real people who love this stuff with real hands-on authentication experience.
So when you see that shiny blue checkmark that says Authenticity Guarantee, shop with confidence. Every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is verified authentic through a detailed inspection. That's how you know that eBay's got your back.
Because when you finally step into those sneakers, put on that watch, get your real gold glow up, swing that handbag over your shoulder, or step out in that streetwear, you'll realize that feeling is unlike any other.
With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach.
Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
As a podcast focus on reliving memories from our past, I can tell you firsthand, as you get older, your memory just isn't as reliable as it used to be.
Yeah, if we didn't have Will here, there would be a lot of dead air.
That is true, Robert. Well, guys, since I know you need a little help, you're going to love Legacy Box. It's the safest way to digitize your home videos and pictures, even when you think you don't have a way to watch them anymore.
Oh, this is perfect, especially with Mother's Day right around the corner.
It really is the perfect gift for the whole family, whether it's a sweet 16 or college graduation.
First steps or performing a Backstreet Boys dance in between scenes on your childhood network sitcom. This is the way to reconnect with your history.
The process is so easy. You just fill your legacy box with old VHS or camcorder tapes, pictures, negatives, film reels. I mean, they even work with over 15 different types of analog media, so they have you covered.
Then you just send the box back and their team professionally digitizes everything by hand in the U.S. and you'll get it all back on the cloud or on a thumb drive along with your originals.
I recently sent off my first box to Legacy Box and I got into my old storage unit and found about 40 tapes, all different media, and I was able to label each one and send it off. I cannot wait to see what these tapes hold.
Jensen and I also recently got some of his home videos digitized, and being able to hear his parents' voices again has been a real gift.
So join over 1.5 million families that have trusted Legacy Box with their memories.
Go to legacybox.com/world to save 60% during their best Mother's Day sale ever.
It's time to connect with your past and make sure those memories are preserved properly.
That's legacybox.com/world. Summer is steadily approaching, and you know what that means.
Wearing a shirt at the beach so I don't look like a sad radish for the entire vacation?
Okay, maybe.
Being thirsty?
Yes, Ryder, you got it. It is time to go outside and bask in the glory that is sunshine with barbecues and hikes and trips to exotic locations.
With your shirt on?
Yes, with your shirt on.
It is time to jump into a camper van with your son and your wife and
torture everyone. Well, with all these summer activities, it's so important that you stay hydrated.
And we're here to tell you all about Liquid IV. It has three times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink, plus 8 vitamins and nutrients in a single stick.
It's clear why Liquid IV is the number one powdered hydration brand in America.
You just rip open a packet and pour it into your water and bam, you're hydrating with electrolytes, essential vitamins, and clinically tested nutrients. But most importantly, it tastes good.
It's so easy and perfect after a workout, which I do to replenish after a nice long run.
And you can travel with Liquid IV right there in your pocket. Add it to a water on a flight or after a big night when you need just a little assistance to get up in the morning.
Tear, pour, live more. One stick plus 16 ounces of water hydrates better than water alone. And with sugar-free flavors like white peach, green grape, raspberry melon, and lemon lime, you can't miss.
Turn your ordinary water into extraordinary hydration with Liquid IV.
Get 20% off your first order of Liquid IV when you go to liquidiv.com and use the code WORLD at checkout.
That's 20% off your first order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code WORLD at liquidiv.com.
I have a question for you. So you talked about the first table read, which we've covered, we've kind of a bit covered from our side, right? What kind of the week was like. But from a writer's standpoint, so we would finish the table read and then it was like we'd scatter. The actors would go one right. way and the writers would go. So once you had all heard the table read, what would happen then script wise?
Yeah. Great question.
Yeah, good question. And our table reads, I think, were Friday, right?
Right.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Which was, in a way, it was good for us because, you know, Michael, you know, he's a devout Jew. So we would always pray for, like, sometimes we would pull the blinds and say, oh, sundown is here. And, you know,
time to go.
We wanted to get out.
Change but the clocks.
We would do whatever it took. But no, so the process would be you guys would leave and then the studio and network would give notes. And the first seasons in particular, maybe even the first couple seasons, you know, Michael, you know, he's a very convincing guy, very powerful guy. And he was able to almost talk them off every note they would give. He goes, well, you know, I understand what you're saying, but we're going to do this and this and this. And so they would give notes. We would go back and do a rewrite, and we would have to stop at sundown. I actually believe on Boy Meets World, we were a little more efficient. On Girl Meets World, we'll talk about it. It was terrible. But
yeah, because you guys would write all weekend, right?
We would work on Sundays. I don't ever remember working on a weekend for Boy.
Okay.
So I think we would either finish, or maybe we would come in early on Monday and try to finish, because then we would have our run through first, right?
Yeah.
On Monday.
Yeah,
Monday.
Producer run through Monday.
So we can see what worked and didn't work based on, you know, some jokes would die. You know, some jokes are really funny in the writer's room, and then, you know, crickets, and you go, oh, man.
Fall flat.
So we do that. Then we do another rewrite that night. And then the next day is the network studio.
How late would you go on like a Monday night?
Yeah, on a Monday night. And by the way, I remember, so I was brand new, and April, she felt like the room would
April
be too
Kelly.
Big.
April Kelly. We've talked about April Kelly, but she's a little bit of a mystery on our show.
She is.
she was a really good writer. She was a very interesting personality. So she didn't want all of us in the rewrites, like me and Sherman. And by the way, all of us just meant me and Sherman had to alternate. She wouldn't have one more person there. I always wanted to stay. I go, I don't care. I'll stay to 5 a.m. I just want to be part of this. This is so exciting. And so.
And she just wanted a smaller group in the room.
That's what she said.
Okay.
And by the way, the group was already 13. I don't know what 14 people would make.
Right.
But
right.
Anyway. Wow. But a lot of times it would go late. I kind of remember there were a few 3 in the morning kind of nights, but not a ton. That show, once it got going, you know, unless the script was really bad and we had to do a scratch rewrite, which sometimes we had to do, then it could go, you know, horribly. But the first year for me was just kind of all fun. I remember once I had a run through, Rusty did like a backflip over a kitchen counter, just enter. And I'm like, I just pointed like, look at that. You see that? And he goes, we don't point. You just watch. But
we don't point.
Yeah, you don't nice. Point.
How far in advance did you guys have the script ideas down? Because that's something we've talked about a lot is like, you know, even so episodes, once you knew Topanga was going to be a part of the cast and like a regular cast member, how far in advance, like was Topanga just added into episodes that had already kind of been written?
No. Well, first of all, you know, when the season first starts, you have a lot of time. You have, was it 6 weeks even? Yeah. I don't remember what pre-production is. But that's all that is coming up with stories. It was actually my least, I get, you know, he would say, all right, everyone come in tomorrow with 10 story ideas. I'll never forget that. I go,
whoa.
And by the way, I didn't think of any storylines coming into the show. I didn't think, get started. There'll be a little run, you know, feeling out process. Come with 10 ideas. You come in the next day and maybe he likes one. Some like few of another, and then
so that means there would be like if out of 13 or 14 of you, there'd be like 140 ideas thrown out.
Well, to start with, I mean, you don't pitch everything,
right?
You learn,
and some of them would be like B storylines, or you know, they would get, yeah, interesting.
That's exactly what would happen. And by the way, and sometimes, at least the first season, like you can pitch an idea that he likes, but you don't necessarily get the script, so it's just kind of which is fine, kind of a free for all thing. And so that's at the beginning, then you have time, and then pick a bunch of stories, and then you start if he likes 10, we start breaking the first one, and you break it, and then the writer who's assigned that gets off, goes, writes an outline.
Explain to our listeners what it means to break an idea.
So say you come up with an idea like, what was the Boy Meets World episode?
Let's do B-Team of Life. Exactly. Yeah. Let's use B-Team of Life.
Okay. Well, I didn't pitch that one. I have no idea how that got the genesis. Well, actually, let's do the other one, Kid Gloves, because that's based on Michael's father, dad, Arnie Jacobs. I think he boxed in the Navy. Maybe he won those silver gloves. I don't remember that. But that just that started a conversation. That started the idea. And that led to that episode. So whoever's assigned, and I was assigned that one, it wasn't my original idea. As a room, you kind of break down the story. You kind of figure out, okay, you know, the plot line, you know, what's the cold open? What's, you know, the first act? What's the act break? And how's it going to end? And you start talking that out. And then you got to break it down scene by scene by scene by scene for the outline. Because the outline has to be approved by Michael and I guess maybe even the studio and network. And once you get an outline, then a writer is sent off to go write that script. And in the very beginning, writers would be given 2 weeks. And since I was brand new, Ed suggested, why don't you fly to Jersey, be with your wife and daughter, and go write one. And that's what the first season was like. Later on, you know, especially when we wrote, like when it became a producer level, you're involved in everything. You don't go off. You write in between rewrites. Yeah. You write in between everything else. And I actually prefer that. I like being in the office and around everything because you don't want to miss out. You know, you want to be part of every run through and every rewrite. So breaking the stories, like, you know, you got to figure out, is there a story? And now this is one area where Michael's, I got to say, this is his biggest genius. You'll pitch an idea and he'll if he likes it even a little bit, he goes, all right, hold on. And then he'll see if he can see the whole story. And if he can't, you can't convince him. And he'll go, no, that's not going to work. Next idea, you know. But other times, right, you'll pitch an idea. You have no idea where it's going to go. You just hope he likes it. And he goes, okay, that's good. That's good. I can see this is what's going to happen. That's what's going to happen. And it just, you know. And then. Wow. And then, you know, the rewrite process, right? So we all rewrite as a group. Yeah. You turn in a script. It's very hard on the heart and the ego. You know, you put your blood and sweat and you go, well, this is the greatest script ever written. And, you know, you find out how wrong you were. Because also part of the problem is you guys are professional actors. These writers would have to act out your roles and you would hate giving certain parts to certain people because they were horrible. Like, I'm not a good actor. You know, I sweat a lot. I get nervous. And sometimes I butchered a line and a writer would go, you butchered that line. But Michael could still see through it. But
yeah.
So you do a read through with the writers and then he'll either, and then you just wait for either the axe to come down or, okay. That's workable. But sometimes none of this works. And you know, you feel bad for the rest of the writers because that means it's going to be a hard week. You know,
right.
If he goes, okay, that's good. It's like a sigh of relief, you know. And
Did you ever fight for anything that everyone was like, this isn't working, and you knew it would, and it's just like, no, I'm telling you, this is going to work. Maybe the actors didn't hit it right in the run through. Because again, that's the other thing is it's such a symbiotic relationship because the you can write the greatest script in the world. If we are off that day and we're not committing to the material, you're not going to be able to see what the script could be.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's why constantly people would tell us, or you hear, trust your writers, because you then have to commit 100% and run into the wall full speed, hoping to knock it down, knowing that sometimes you're just going to knock yourself unconscious. But was there ever a time you can remember where you're essentially saying, no, I know this is going to work. They didn't nail it today. It's going to work. Let's keep it in.
I mean, me personally, probably not often. I mean, a couple times you fight, mostly you fight for a joke that you like. And that's something you learn also, to be honest, as a writer. The jokes aren't that as important. I mean, there's some jokes that I love so much that I did fight a little bit and network cut it because it maybe had like a little part of a bad word in it. You know, like I think it was Nostra Dumbass, you know?
Yeah. And that was a Matt Lawrence Nostra line, Dumbass. Season 7. Yep. Season 7, Matt Lawrence
and they
line.
They cut that. And Michael, I think, fought for it. I mean, like, here's the truth. We could have a bad run through and not because you guys suck, just because whatever. It's just something was off. I'd say a lot of times we can see through it, but sometimes you can't. You know, if we'll give it another chance, if it doesn't work in the second run through, it's gone.
Yeah.
No matter what you do. Yeah. So, I mean, people have fought for lines and fought for moments. And usually, you know, if they are really good, they'll stick in there. the scripts do get better. The process, as much as sometimes it's painful, as a writer, to just see your script go, you know, I mean, and by the way, this was way before like computers. So sometimes Michael would take a pencil and scratch out every word on the
Michael
script.
And his pencils. Oh, we remember. Yeah.
And
remember
that. So I have a quick question. Do you remember your favorite joke that you wrote that got into the show? Do you have like a favorite line?
I mean, you know, you're not supposed to do it. It's not cool to do it. The only joke.
Come on.
I have two that I think are ascribed to you.
Yeah. Well, Nostradamus, to be honest, but that was one of my favorite jokes. I hated losing that. And the only one, and I only tell it because Michael tells it. So I feel like he's the one who talks about it. And by the way, he talked about this joke for so many years. It sounds like I wrote one good joke, which I wrote one great joke. But I mean, again, it's a writer's, the whole process gets,
right,
but
it's all shared.
It was the, you know, you and Corey in the closet when Feeny finds you in the, you know, maybe.
Okay, I always thought that was your joke, and I didn't know if that was true.
But thought it because Michael told, he told everyone that. He goes, Manila wrote that one joke. And literally, this is 10 years after Boy Meets World. He's thought about that one joke. So it kind of, I kind of got labeled by that one joke. But anyway, other than that.
But it's still my favorite line. We were just talking about it. It's still like my favorite line. It makes me laugh every time. And then the other one was the something creepy under boat. Andy, was that you too? Yes.
Well, I'll tell you the truth. It was in my first, that was the kid gloves, right? So second script. I wrote, I think, something cold under boat, Andy, and he changed it to creepy, which is much funnier. Much funnier. Yeah.
Wait, so I do want to just go back and remind the audience what the line is that both of you guys were talking about, that when Feeny catches you guys in the closet, right? Or say what it is.
Don't move. Maybe he doesn't see us.
Yeah, as he's staring right at them from a foot away. Yeah.
Listen, two things. One of the reasons that really works is Bill's look of like, are you kidding?
What? Right.
How stupid are you guys? His look was great. You guys were great. And, you know,
and it was just on the heels of Jurassic Park coming out too. Like Jurassic Park was only a year old, where that whole idea of like not moving and the T-Rex wouldn't sit, it was just so great.
Don't move. You know, this is going to sound very pretentious, but I'm not very writer-y, you know, and so, but I will just say this. I remember we were in the writer's room and we were having trouble coming up with a line. And I actually, you know, so you get credit for this, writer. I go, what would Sean say? I mean, I actually did that. Not that I dumbed down, but I just wanted to say, what would Sean say? So, you know, Sean, you know, I'm not going to say Sean wrote the line. And it was in the air because of Jurassic Park, but it just fit. Yeah. That's all. But
so great. Yeah.
So great.
By the way, there's a lot of stuff I don't remember. Like people said, was that yours? I don't, you know, there's one John Strauss. I tried, and it's out of context, not even the funniest line, but it's just like, it was a funny moment. I go, that was yours. He goes, no, that was yours. Like we fought. I'm positive it was yours.
Neither of you remember it, right?
And by the way, that never happens in a writer's room.
Yeah, everyone's like, that was mine.
But,
do you have a favorite episode that you wrote, and why is it? And then there was Sean.
That's the one.
Yeah. That's the one, man.
And then there was Sean.
That's something we should bracket very quickly by saying, because have we always refer to it, this is the man that wrote the Scream episode.
Yes.
Yeah. But I mean, well, again, and I really do want to, I'm not humble or anything like that. You know, every script you guys get is rewritten with the room, you know, through Michael's eyes, but through the whole room. That one, though, I probably more lasted than a lot of other. I had some scripts that were totally rewritten. That one is unfair because it was a really fun, so different type script.
Yeah.
And I will say this, it's the only script I did, you know, you say, do you ever fight for anything? We were talking about doing this kind of movie thing, and I love movies so much. And I won't tell you my email because it's film is in there, you know, something else I love.
Right.
And actually, I'll never forget. I not that I was a pushover, but I was like just so grateful to be there, and I wasn't aggressive or ambitious even. Yeah, I never took a meeting while I was writing. Everyone's off writing. I didn't know you were supposed to use this as a launching pad to get somewhere else. I just thought, oh boy, this role will run forever, and I'm good, you know. But I went to Michael's office. I said, listen, there's something being talked about. And I think someone else was maybe running the show at the time. I don't remember why I went to him elsewhere. But I said, I should write this. This is just in my wheelhouse. And he gave it to me. And I mean, I, I had to lie about this, by the way. I wrote it like in 2 days, but he goes, I remember third day in, he goes, where are you? I go, oh, I'm like on page 30. He goes, you better not be. You should be on page 10. I go, I'm kidding. Of course I'm on page 10. It was done.
It was done.
It was done. Because it was just so much fun to write. So and putting different kind of lines in your guys' mouths was fun.
It is such a classic episode.
Yeah.
Easily the number one most talked about episode over the years. Still to this day, we go to conventions, we meet people. It's the number one episode people want to talk about.
They've written articles about it. Like they've done full breakdowns of the episode.
Every Halloween. Yeah. I got to tell you, and I'm not overstating this. I wrote a good draft and it got better in the writer's room, but I want to give 90% credit to Jeff McCracken. This guy, he got that script and I'd never seen it. He goes, oh my God, I know what I'm going to do with this. And I remember our first run through, even with and the lighting and the music, Ray Colcord and everything. Yeah. You guys were great.
No, we weren't. We were together. Don't lie. We couldn't keep it together.
Being good, but
you guys said you had a great time fooling around, but it worked perfectly against the backdrop.
By any chance, remember the name of the janitor, the actor who played the janitor?
No, but to be honest, I actually was sort of interviewed for this for some online thing. And he said, I heard that. He said he was an actor that was known from something else, but I don't remember his name. I looked him up a long time ago.
But
I don't
he,
think
was
he was
there.
An actor.
You saw him too, right?
Yes.
We're still trying to track him down, and now we're wondering if he never even existed.
He was a background actor. That's why he didn't get credit. Like, there's no IMDb credit for background. So
I think I want to say either McCracken or someone on set saw him and brought either him or picked her up. The mic goes, yeah, perfect. And my guy, was he perfect? He was scary looking. Great.
Now,
so,
Jeff.
Oh, go ahead.
I know how humble you are. And I also know the truth that jokes and scripts get rewritten by everybody. But two of my favorite jokes in the entire series are in that episode, the Scream episode. One is the pencil joke. We'll always remember he was this tall.
Great joke.
That's fine. I don't think that's mine. I don't want to give every line that's not mine to Michael, but I'm pretty sure that's not mine. But that's a great joke.
I love that joke.
It was also Michael's idea to have him slide down the wall with the pencil. That was great.
Yeah. And then my other favorite joke is, I will get as close to dying as you can possibly get without actually dying.
Yeah.
I love that joke and I thank you. And it's not mine. I don't know whose it was. I also think that was Michael's. Again, I don't want to take away from any other writer.
Yeah.
I'll always be honest. If I don't know it was mine, I'll say, I don't think it was mine. That one was not mine.
They're genius lines, whoever wrote them. Credit to whoever wrote them. They're both genius. So those are just two of my favorite jokes.
I have a question. So you're in the writer's room. Now, Ryder alluded to this the other day, that apparently we've heard that there were certain writers that were maybe not more acclimated, it's not the right way to say it, that maybe had the voice of a certain character in their mouth more than somebody else. Like, they're great with Sean, they're great with Eric, they're great with Topanga. Was that true?
You know, that was true. Matt Nelson, to be honest, and especially in the later years, was considered the voice of Sean, especially when Sean became very, deeper and maybe even
angsty. Soulful Matt Nelson. Yes, totally.
Because Matt had a lot of angst but he was a great writer. He was also a great writer. He was a playwright.
So,
it wouldn't be like he would do all the Sean lines, but sometimes, especially in a script that he wrote or someone else wrote, he could get that voice. Michael would go, Matt,
what would Sean say here? Yeah,
exactly. And sometimes, Matt's
so who
sandwich, so.
Who was Morgan?
even Morgan doesn't know who was Morgan.
Second Morgan, not the first one. Oh, the second Morgan. Morgan. Who was Morgan?
No, I don't know. That was
so. You mentioned like the kid gloves episode was inspired by a real life story from Michael's life. Did any of your personal life experiences make it into an episode?
Let's see. Yeah, a lot. On Grumpy's World, I had one, but the only one was, I remember once I got bit by a dog, and I think I just thought about that, and it was bad, and I was really nervous what was going to happen, and so I pitched the idea, but Blutman and Busgang wrote the script where Corey gets bit and thinks he's turning into a werewolf. So I didn't think I was turning into a werewolf.
Right.
But I did think he got bit by something. He didn't know what it was, and hair started growing on his arms. But they ran with it, and they wrote a real, really funny script. You're pitching stuff all the times from your life, you know, a bad sleepover, stuff like that, you know, things go wrong. And they change. You know, you can pitch one idea that becomes something entirely different.
Right.
And that's the good process of the right, you know, the writer's room. Someone will take something and run with it, and you go, ooh, that's better than I thought.
So, now, would you ever, was there ever a story that you kept pitching over and over again that you wanted to get done that just never happened, where it was like, I want to do this, and it just never happened?
Now, there was some you pitched that you kind of knew this is stupid, but you think it could be funny. You know, I don't remember. I'd rather not even say it because they were so bad. Some of them were so bad. You know, I think Blubber the Busking kept wanting to pitch. Corey wanted to pretend to be Jewish so we could have a bar mitzvah, which was very funny. He wanted to get
that
gifts.
That is funny.
But it just never happened. I think they pitched that a couple of times. There was one I pitched that I remember. Now I won't go to it. It's kind of disgusting. I think I wanted to pitch Ryder's the first guy to try to get a job on Mars. He wants to beat the Rush. Right. You know, so I mean, there's just stupid things out there. But nothing that I would ever push. Because to be honest, if Michael says no, or it doesn't go, you don't want to be that guy that, hey, remember that one I pitched? Oh, yeah, the one I hated? Yeah. Why don't you pitch that again? So probably not.
We talk a lot about moms on this podcast and how important they are to us.
Absolutely. Without Jen Fischel, what pictures would we post on our social media?
But above and beyond all the incredible mom things they did for us, laundry, dinners, let us travel to Los Angeles alone to chase our dreams of acting. Will, what else was your mom doing?
My mom was also running all three courts in Connecticut while authoring books.
Wow. Well, whether your mom was a legal trailblazer or just the greatest source of inspiration and care in the world, this Mother's Day, she deserves some flowers.
You are right, and that's why I'm sending mine Farm Fresh Flowers from Bouqs.
That's short for bouquets. And while I'm teaching you things, how about 25% off your entire Bouqs order so you can join us in treating our mothers to a beautiful arrangement?
Love it.
Here's why I like the Bouqs company. They are different. Their flowers are cut fresh and sourced directly from the best flower farms, so they last way longer. They even have flowers grown on the side of a volcano.
That's really cool. Bouqs has modern designs and unique flowers you can't find anywhere else. Your mom is unique, so she deserves flowers just as special.
And Bouqs is simple. I went online, picked the delivery date, and I'm done.
Mother's Day is May 12th. Don't miss the chance to thank your mom. Order your Bouqs now.
And with 25% off, you can send some to mom, wife, aunt, and even grandma.
Go to Bouqs.com and use promo code WORLD for 25% off.
That's Bouqs.com, promo code WORLD.
Bouqs, promo code WORLD. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee, and you'll feel it.
Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh, every step feels fly.
When it comes to style and luxury, eBay gets it. They're making sure the things you love are checked by the experts.
Not just any experts, specialized experts. Real people who love this stuff with real hands-on authentication experience.
So when you see that shiny blue checkmark that says Authenticity Guarantee, shop with confidence. Every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is verified authentic through a detailed inspection. That's how you know that eBay's got your back.
Because when you finally step into those sneakers, put on that watch, get your real gold glow up, swing that handbag over your shoulder, or step out in that streetwear, you'll realize that feeling is unlike any other.
With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach.
Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
This episode is brought to you by Huggies Little Movers.
Listen, Huggies knows that babies come in all shapes and sizes, and so do their tushies.
Especially when they start really moving.
With Huggies Little Movers, you get their best-fitting diaper with its curved and stretchy fit.
That's right. So no matter what kind of mover you've got, they'll feel protected and comfy while their little tushy wiggles and jiggles all around.
Huggies Little Movers has curves designed to fit all baby curves, and helps provide up to 12-hour protection against leaks.
So make the switch to Huggies Little Movers today.
We got you, baby.
What if there was someone who wanted to help you find a job? Not a website, but a person in your community that would help you for free. Choose Express Employment Professionals, and that's exactly what you'll get.
Express Employment Professionals is the local jobs expert you can trust, and they never charge a fee to help with your job search.
Go to expresspros.com to find the office near you or download the Express Jobs app to get started.
With a wide range of opportunities in a variety of industries, from welding to sales, forklift operator to customer service, the team at Express is ready to help you or someone you know take the next career step.
Whether you're looking for a contract job for the summer or a new full-time role, turn to Express Employment.
Interviewing with Express Employment Professionals can be as easy as a phone call. And one application with Express puts you in the running for numerous opportunities in your community.
Don't go in your job search alone.
Visit expresspros.com today.
So I'm wondering, Jeff, if you remember, because we had this debate when we watched B-Team of Life, which aired as the 13th episode.
I actually listened to that.
Okay, so was
wrong,
that actually...
You're all wrong. No,
really, really?
Wrong. Yeah, but I understand. It was early. It was one of the earlier scripts. And I guess you're probably right. Maybe it was too close to the pilot. So
we were right.
But I mean... It was
within the first run of like five episodes, right? And then it just got pushed into the back.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I believe it was like the second or third one that we wrote, that we broke, that we shot. But, you know, why things get moved around, that was way above my pay grade. So I have no idea why.
Right.
But you're probably right as far as that goes. They probably go, too close to the pilot, let's just move it. It didn't matter, you know?
Yeah.
I got to tell you, I was listening to you guys' analysis. I have not seen those shows, I'm not kidding, since 1994, you know. So those two episodes, I haven't, you know. But Kid Gloves, I watched it yesterday. I teared up at the end. It was really sweet.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just so nice to see everyone so young.
It is a nice show. It's a nice show. It really is.
It were you aware so of that? I mean, when you were when you guys were in the writer's room, how much of, like... Because the tone of Boy Meets World is very unique, right? Like, it's not a silly sitcom. It wasn't like other kid shows at the time. And were you guys conscious of that? Were you talking about that? Were you aware, like, oh, we're going to make sure that this actually pulls some heartstrings and says something real? I mean, what was that conversation like?
I think I would say, as far as I can remember, again, it's a long time ago. I do remember. You know, there was always heart. Mike always wanted to have a message. There was always wanted to do a little more. I mean, listen, always wanted to be funny. Because funny is important.
Priority number one.
It should be. But, you know, later on, maybe it wasn't for some of ourselves, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like John Strauss once called me and said, when he was let off the show, he goes, when did the show become a drama? And I go,
yeah,
you know, but I about actually
season
like that.
Four.
Yeah. Never, never for
three
me.
Three and a half.
Never became a drama for me. Was always
for Eric.
We'll get to you in a second. I have a thought about you. I remember when you came in and you begged us to stop making you so stupid, and I think we rewarded you by making you become a couch cushion.
Yes, I think that was pretty much what happened. I did. I remember. Yeah,
thanks
I
for
did.
Speaking up. Well, yeah,
I came in and walked in. And
get
was
in
like,
the cushion.
Can we do something that's not like this, please? Yes.
Oh. But to be honest, Ryder, I don't think we were trying to be. One thing Michael would always say: we never wanted to talk down to the kids. Never wanted to treat them like. I mean, treat them like kids, but not talk down to them. Never be condescending, because most of the storylines they will understand and get. And, you know, even though we were young when we started, I like to think we always thought we were like doing a little bit more, a little bit better. We cared a lot. And I think every episode, except for maybe Last Tango in Philly, not my favorite episode that I wrote, had a message or had a good message, you know, and, always had heart, and we always tried to take it one step above. I think we did, at least in hindsight, we did.
Yeah. Well, the thing that amazes me, or actually all of us, is that none of us realized how involved the parents were.
Yeah.
Because we're in school when they're rehearsing, so you kind of, and then they're adults, we're not kind of with them. But as we're watching the show, there's a lot of Amy and Alan and Feeny, and they're so good. Yeah. But again, to go to Ryder's point that it's not a kid's show at all, it's this hybrid show where it's all about the kids, and then there's two scenes that's just Betsy and Rusty.
Yeah.
So it was a very interesting combination of the two, and something that I don't think has really been seen before or since. It was either about the kids or about the adults.
Right.
Interesting kind of combo.
No, that's a good point. I can't speak to like whether that was a conscious thing. Certainly not on my part. It wasn't. But but you're right. I was watching those two episodes last night. I go, they're great. First of all, you know, they're just so good together.
They're great.
So I had no idea how beautiful Betsy was until I watched her yesterday. I go, I used to hang on the set with that woman. Yeah, you know, she's beautiful, but she was just so natural. She really had her.
And still Rusty. That pretty. Still that pretty, too.
Yeah.
I know. She
I saw her a few years ago. She looks great. Yeah. And and Rusty is the best. I'm in touch with him.
But Rusty, still that pretty. Still that pretty.
Still beautiful.
So that full head of hair, he's crazy. But
Do you remember playing Santa in the Family Trees episode?
Do I remember? Yes. I just got a $1.50 check for that.
Spend it all.
Residuals.
Yeah, we talked about residuals.
I fought against it because, you know, they once dressed me up as a carrot, and because they just wanted to put a fat man in a carrot suit, and then Mike goes, you're going to be Santa, and I go, I know why you want me to be, because, you know, I'm the heaviest guy on staff, and I go, I don't want to be on camera because, you know, again, I sweat a lot and this and that, and putting the Santa suit on,
yeah, it's so hot.
But I got to tell you, you know, it was a great moment between me and Ryder, and Fred Savage directed it, and he said, I nailed it in one, but we did two takes. And,
he says
that to everyone. For safety.
Yeah,
for safety. That's what he said. So I, of course, I remember it. It's a cool thing that I had, you know, that I have one line on television.
And weren't you also, was it Jeff Baggy Bagwell?
Yes. But that's just a picture, right?
But it's the photo. It's with the baseball player who'd been hit by the most pitches. Is that right? Yeah. In the history of baseball?
Yeah. And yes. Eric, that was who you were investing in. That was your big investment to be the guy who got hit by more pitches. And then he retired right before he would break the record.
Break the record?
You lost your $1,000.
$1,000 on Jeff Baggy Bagwell. I just remember a big, swollen faced picture of you.
Yep. I put stuff in my cheeks. They put black stuff under my. That one I kind of enjoyed. I think I have that picture somewhere.
You know what's going back just a little bit to the idea of it being very important to Michael to never talk down to the audience. There is such a weird like formula, but it wasn't a formula because we can't figure out exactly what the magic potion was that made it work. But there are a lot of terms people use these days that they use in like a kind of a derogatory way, like you're so woke or virtue signaling. Yeah. And yet Boy Meets World always had a good message. In a lot of ways, people today might say it was a woke show or that it was a show that virtue signaled because it did really kind of put forth good messages of how to be a good family member, how to be a good friend, how to be a good member of society. And yet people love it. They don't think about it in any sort of derogatory way. They recognize that they're getting such an incredible lesson and they don't feel like they're being beaten over the head with it. Like what is it that made it work? It was it's magic. I mean, if you think about the fact that still 30 years later, the show still holds up and we are able to sit here and break down episodes and people want to hear us talk about it. There are very few shows that could still do that 30 years later. What do you think that like secret was?
That's a good point. I mean, maybe just because there always was a moral compass, you know, within Michael and with the writers. I mean, you could pitch something that could be really funny, that could be inappropriate, obviously. In the writers' room, obviously, you know, there's so much inappropriateness back in the day that could not survive today. But a lot of that wouldn't get into the scripts because always wanted to be true to the characters. You know, Michael was very keen on protecting the characters. And I just think we always did what you guys would do. In other words, like, you know, we're not going to do something. I wouldn't say we were woke or even thought about that kind of thing.
A progressive show.
Well, you're right. And by the way, I think you guys have talked about maybe Ryder or Will said in that the B Team story, when Ryder comes in with that article to show Corey about other guys that used to sit on the bench. What a good friend. I think because the heart of the show is relationships with all these people, that it just sort of naturally lent to what you're talking about. I mean, yeah, this is all in hindsight. We look back now. I don't know that we were the only show like that. I honestly don't know, but I think we sort of maybe just got lucky because we did what we wanted to do and wanted to have a good message in each episode. And that lends itself to not doing that stuff that you would cringe now going, oh, we shouldn't have done that or said that. So, but that's just a guess.
Well, kudos to all of you guys in the room for, you know, I mean, like you said, they're in all writers' rooms. They're, you know, in order to like keep creativity flowing, sometimes you're pitching things that are like, okay, here's a bad joke, but it'll hopefully get us to a better joke. And yeah, here's something that's totally inappropriate that we're not going to use, but hopefully sure, it like sparks something that, you know, mm-hmm. And like you said, there are definitely things that I'm sure were said that would not be said now. And, right. But ultimately I think, you know, it's been one of my favorite things, watching the show. People had told us over the years, wow, like it still holds up and there's still such great lessons in it, but we hadn't watched it. And so now watching it ourselves, I think right, we've all been really pleasantly surprised through this first season of just how much we actually enjoy it.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And it shows you guys, I mean, you guys definitely had fun and your camaraderie and chemistry came across right from the beginning. You know, I didn't even remember, Danielle, that you were in not a lot of episodes at the very beginning. Yeah. I mean, so it's kind of weird when you don't see it, but then you really grew as a character, obviously, because once we realized, you know, you were going to be part of the show, it became a big thing. But you guys are a big part of that. You know, you brought the right character to the character, you know, so.
Well, to that end, do you have any insight to who actually named Topanga?
Part of my problem is, you know, I've heard a lot of the stories. Who's telling the right one? I can tell you this. No, I'd rather not get involved because
he's pleading the fifth. He's pleading the fifth.
Well, no, I'm not going to plead the fifth because Michael, you know, he did drive by, you know, Topanga Canyon. There's a lot of times where he'd say, I'm 20 minutes away, I'm at Topanga. So there's probably there's a chance of that, but I know Sherman put it in his script the first time. I don't think Bill Lawrence did it.
Right.
No, I heard he said he did it. He wrote a freelance episode verse. But honestly, I can't say I remember the seminal moment. But you know, I'm going to believe Michael on this just because he did say I'm at Topanga so many times that I'm not disbelieving Sherman. I know Sherman put it in his. It was in his script, the first script. You know, I'm a witness to a lot of stuff, but these days I'm not a great witness because I don't remember. You know, it's like a lawyer would say that was 30 years ago, Your Honor. What does he remember? And yeah. I remember a lot of things, but not everything. But
okay, so
Michael and Sherman.
Somewhere between Michael and Sherman. Okay, I'll take that answer. Now, we've given you a lot of praise that's well deserved. Now I have a question.
Uh-oh.
B team of life.
Yeah.
How does the math work out that the Matthews family?
I heard you guys are arguing over this.
Yeah, did we cut the time machine scene?
Yeah,
is that the thing that happened?
Is there something we missed?
No, but I will say this: I used to live outside Philly, and Cheltenham's not that far from Philly, so which unfortunately hurts what I'm about to say.
Yeah, makes it even worse.
It does make it worse. I think, but one of you made a good argument. I think it was Will or Ryder, but just like, you know, you go early. The bus leaves early. They get there early. I don't know what time the family, by the time he got home, they may have just left to go. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I can justify the family. They not necessarily have gone for hours. The team was gone for hours. I'd say let's stop analyzing stuff. You can find a lot of plot holes in a lot of shows.
Can you justify not spatchcocking the chicken?
Yeah,
how do we justify that, Manel?
I didn't think that term would ever come up again. I've never heard it. So you said it.
I still have never heard it except from Will.
I like cooking. I do hate that Corey just threw that chicken into the dirt. What a waste.
That was real waste.
It was really wasteful. And I thought Bill was much less angry than I would have been.
Yeah.
I mean, that's dinner.
He was very understanding.
Well, he knows he wasn't cooking it right, so he didn't really care all that much about it. So that was the thing.
Yeah. I told you how to spatchcock.
Final controversial question. Is it a backyard or is it a side yard?
I've never thought about that till I heard you guys talk about it. It's a side backyard. Everyone knows that. There's not many of them. It's the only one ever on television. But it is. Listen, you know, my front door doesn't face the street. It faces my neighbor's house. So there are certain. I don't like that.
Many politician answers. When are you running for Congress? I'm curious.
I'm not trying to be impartial. I don't have a great answer for you. I never worry about that stuff because I was just so happy to be on set with all of you. And
what's
and be
this
part
awesome,
of the show.
What's this awesome Boy Meets World art you have back there?
That's the poster I have. I have the same one.
No, not that. This thing. Oh, that's, oh, oh, you know what? Poster.
Yeah,
Boy Meets World and Raging Bull.
Yeah, yeah, we got Raging Bull.
Two of the greatest films and television shows in Americana history.
It's the total spectrum, one end or the other.
Yeah,
I've had that. You know, Michael gave it to me many years ago. He was moving. He goes,
and I don't want this.
He didn't say that. I said, can I have that? Because he had others. He goes, yeah, take it. And it was my wife hangs it when she's teaching. I put Raging Bull back on when she's not because I love you guys. But Raging Bull is my favorite movie of all time. And, of course, yep. Boy Meets World is my favorite show of all time. Boy, I am political. I should run for office.
You really should. It's really good to see you. Thank you so much for being here with us and answering our hard-hitting questions. And
yeah, kind of.
I know. I mean, but listen. Michael tell the Topanga story, but I know Sherman put it in his script. And so I know both those are facts. You decide what that all means.
Okay, yeah. Fair enough. But do we decide it from the side yard or the backyard? Is the
I have to, you can decide why you're spatchcocking
a chicken, yeah.
I see both those people, so I believe everyone.
And the janitor is still a ghost.
I looked him up after this guy interviewed me. I found him, and because he thought he was in another movie, he said, "Is that the guy from so and so?" And it wasn't. Okay. He was an actor.
I think Ryder's right. I think he was a background actor.
Yeah.
He was.
Yeah,
he was.
I don't know what
We will say, you know, the person we should ask is Dee Dee, because she might remember Dee Dee or Michael Shea, because
Michael
they would have been in charge of the background. So maybe they would remember the guy's name. They might have been there a couple weeks somewhere or something.
Well, Steve Hayford should know, right?
Or, yeah.
Maybe. Yeah. I don't know.
No, I think Dee Dee or Michael Shea.
Yeah, they would have been in charge of background.
Yeah. So we understand that we're putting you on the spot with certain things, but the one thing we can all agree on is how thankful we are that you came up with the idea for this podcast.
Yeah. Thank you for that.
I said I wanted to be anonymous on that.
I know, but it was a great idea.
Thanks for inviting me on. I was nervous, as you know, but...
We love you, Jeff. Thank you for
love
being
you
here.
Too. See you, Jeff. See you guys.
Bye.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye.
He really should be a politician. Really should.
Still don't know. Still no real inside into Panga and still don't know side yard, backyard.
No, won't say side yard, backyard. Also won't take credit for any of the lines that we absolutely love.
That's an old
take
school
credit
writer
for his,
thing.
I know. Well, and old he says, he's like, thing. I'm not humble. It's like, well.
Yeah.
But man, that's fun.
He's exactly the same. Now, very briefly, was he the only writer that did all 7 years of Boy all of Girl?
Yeah.
I think that
he's
is
the
correct.
Only one, right?
Yes. Okay.
And what's interesting too to think about is like, you know, and I will have to, when we get to second and third season, Michael stepped away from the show for a period.
Yeah.
And David Kendall came in as our showrunner. He started other shows.
Yeah.
He started Misery Loves Company and
You Wish.
Maybe This Time and You Wish. Well, Jeff Sherman ran You Wish, actually.
Oh, that's
so Michael was EPing. But Michael actually left our show for a period. Like, I remember we would have note sessions without Michael.
Yeah.
But Manel was always there. So in a weird way, he's actually probably the most consistent writer, producer for our show from start to finish. And Girl Meets World. He was there for every episode of Girl Meets World. So Manel's been around for all of it.
Yeah,
really
I mean, truthfully, the good news is it kind of makes him a perfect guest to have on as the seasons progress because he'll be, he could be good at that. I know he gets nervous and doesn't like to be interviewed and all that stuff, but the fact that he's like one of the OGs and stuck around for all those years, he can come back.
Well, Danielle, you weren't in every episode. I wasn't in every episode. Ryder, were you in every episode of the show?
Yes.
You didn't skip a single one?
No, and I was the only actor who had... Up until the last season, I had never missed a tape night. And then I remember that one week I got sick. I got mono and the flu on top of each other.
Oh, my
gosh.
And
so I missed that tape night that was in the seventh season. Otherwise, up until then, I had been for every tape night. Because we used to do tape nights without Ben because he would have finals every year. So there were episodes. Yeah, everybody else had, you know, but that was like I had never missed a tape night until that.
So you and Manel might be the only two people involved in every single episode of Boy.
Why are you not? You're not in an episode, Will? Why?
Oh, I did it. There was a couple episodes I wasn't in. There was often
they just wrote you out because
Michael would come up to me and he'd put his arm on my shoulder and he'd go, "Hey, you got we tried to work it out, didn't work out. You got a paid vacation next week." And I go, "Okay." And that happened several times. I think there's four or five that I'm not in.
Wow,
I mean, I know like the one where you're sitting on the on the sign, like trying to win tickets to something.
Oh, the Super Bowl.
Oh, the Eskimo.
Super Bowl. Yeah, I don't think I'm in that one. I think maybe there's a wrestling one or two I'm not in. So, yeah, I didn't do every episode.
All right. Well, then I bet you, I mean, as far as being in every episode, it's probably me and Ben. Because Ben's definitely in every episode. But he wasn't there for every tape night. Yeah. That's interesting. Yeah. So me, Ben, and Manel.
We'll figure it out.
All right. Well, thank you guys for joining us for this episode of Pod Meets World. You can follow us on Instagram, Pod Meets World Show. You can email us at podmeetsworldshow@gmail.com. And we have shirts and stuff. It's called merch.
Merch.
Podmeetsworldshow.com. Join us for our next episode later in the week. And yeah, thank you guys for being here with us. Hope you're well. I'll do our sign off this time. We love you all. Pod dismissed. Pod Meets World is an iHeart podcast produced and hosted by Danielle Fishel, Will Friedle, and Ryder Strong. Executive producers, Jensen Karp and Amy Sugarman. Executive in charge of production, Danielle Romo. Producer and editor, Tara Sudbach. Producer, Jackie Rodriguez. Engineer and Boy Meets World superfan, Easton Allen. Our theme song is by Kyle Morton of Typhoon. You can follow us on Instagram at Pod Meets World Show or email us at podmeetsworldshow@gmail.com.
This episode is brought to you by Huggies Little Movers.
Listen, Huggies knows that babies come in all shapes and sizes, and so do their tushies.
Especially when they start really moving.
With Huggies Little Movers, you get their best-fitting diaper with its curved and stretchy fit.
That's right. So no matter what kind of mover you've got, they'll feel protected and comfy while their little tushy wiggles and jiggles all around.
Huggies Little Movers has curves designed to fit all baby curves, and helps provide up to 12-hour protection against leaks.
So, make the switch to Huggies Little Movers today.
We got you, baby.
When I'm on my way to drop off the kids at school and I'm on about 5 hours of sleep and I haven't had my coffee yet, I'm truly one of a kind.
Yeah, this sounds like the beginning of a horror movie.
It is. But there is one thing I can do immediately to bring some comfort and calm to the situation and keep me moving forward. Eat Keebler Sandies.
I like to think that if the good-looking guy was still around, sitting on the couch, comforting himself about not getting into college, he'd ditch the Cocoa Puffs and down some Keebler Sandies instead.
Mixed with chocolate syrup?
Ooh, why not?
When you need a comforting moment for yourself, Keebler Sandies is the perfect treat to keep you going.
Each Keebler Sandies shortbread cookie is baked to perfection by the Keebler Elves for a light sweetness and a texture that melts in your mouth.
The next time you feel like you're juggling it all, reach for Keebler Sandies shortbread cookies to enjoy a simple moment of comfort.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp.
It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference.
That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through.
BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy.
Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you.
Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com. When it comes to Pod Meets World, we're synonymous with two things. Watching our younger selves on a TV show from 30 years ago and loving Hyundai.
The first ever fully electric Hyundai Ioniq 5.
With up to 303-mile range, available two-way charging, and other category-defining features, the fully electric Hyundai Ioniq 5 is one of the most teched-out electric vehicles ever.
And as you know, we are tech heads.
The standard ultra-fast charging capability gives you an 80% charge in just 18 minutes when using a 250-plus kilowatt DC fast charger.
And with the available two-way charging, you can charge larger electronic equipment inside and outside the car, backyard or side yard.
Hyundai, it's your journey. Learn more at HyundaiUSA.com.
Call 562-314-4603 for complete details. 2024 Ioniq 5 rear-wheel drive has an EPA estimated driving range of up to 303 miles. Actual range will vary with options, driving conditions and habits, vehicle and batteries condition, and other factors. Available in limited quantities and select states only.